BBC has been working in the field of broadcast technology for the past few years, and video compression is very crucial to this technology because of the limited capabilities of bandwidth and storage capabilities. And so the BBC started investigating state-of-the-art video compression systems. In March 2004, we released an experimental codec called DIRAC, aimed at applications from internet streaming to HDTV and digital cinema. The philosophy behind DIRAC was to keep it as simple as possible. We wanted to reduce the complexity that goes with most major video compression codecs when you're handling a wide stream of applications, all the way down from video streaming to up to digital cinema. So we just selected a few small code techniques that were chosen based for their good subjective performance. And we've also tried to make DIRAC as easy to use. So in designing the bitstream, we kept this in mind. So the we made the DIRAC bitstream easy to parse. So each frame has offsets to the next frame and there's a previous frame. So it's almost like a double linked list. And that makes navigation of the stream easier and much quicker as well. And DIRAC has been designed to be open technology, and the source for DIRAC is available for download, and it can be downloaded by anyone and modified for their own use. And because it's open technology, it can be used freely and as well. And this question is, why another codec when there's so many codecs already available? With changes in technology, especially with internet streaming, and you see that when using any proprietary codec or codecs, open standard codecs such as H.264, there's lots of licensing issues involved as well as royalty payments. And for a public service broadcaster, these licensing costs can add up and can be quite significant. And also being a public service broadcaster, one wouldn't want to be tied down to a platform. They want to be platform independent and not be tied down to a platform when using a proprietary codec. And just a brief run through the DIRAC architecture. DIRAC is just like any other hybrid motion compensation prediction video codec. So these are the block diagram shows the various blocks used in the DIRAC. So we track the image motion, and this motion information is used to predict later frames. And once this motion compensation residuals are then transform coded and quantized and entropy coded. So motion compensation is used to reduce the temporal redundancy, and transform coding is used to reduce the spatial redundancy. For transform coding, DIRAC differs from the other from MPEG-2 family of codecs because it uses Weber transforms instead of block transforms. So Weber transforms have proved to be more effective for coding still images rather than block transforms because the artifacts, like softness introduced by Weber coding, is much more pleasing to the eye than block transforms. In DIRAC, we use Weber transforms for both the intra pictures as well as for motion compensation residuals. And we found that this does introduce softness in moving pictures, but we found that softness in moving pictures is more bearable than just in blocky artifacts. And we use a variable number of transform levels. Sorry about that. And we use a wide range of variable transforms as well, filters as well, depending upon the application. Like for low latency applications, we use the hard transform, which is simple and easy to implement. And fidelity filters are used at the higher end, where you need high quality images in digital cinema. So, a Weber transform is constructed by splitting the signal into its lower and frequency, low frequency and high frequency components. And because for two dimensional signal, this means that you split it both in the horizontal as well as vertical directions. So for each level of transform, you have two. You apply two steps for each level of transform. So two level transform effect will have four splitting stages. And here is an example of the different stages of a wavelet transform. On the left-hand side is the original image. The image in the middle is after stage one of the first level transform has been applied, and the rightmost one is where the second level transform has been applied. So you can see that in the middle, after one level of transform was applied, the most of the information, though the images are the same size, most of the information is concentrated on the top left-hand corner. So this is how compression efficiency is obtained using wavelet transforms, because most of the information is packed to one corner of the image. You do see some detail in the other, in the high frequency, but it's not as much as it's in the lower top left corner. So the image, more and more, you can pack more of the content by applying more levels of the wavelet transform. And so you see the right-hand picture has a second level of transform is applied, but only to the top left corner of the first level. But you see more and more content appearing now. So though information is packed more tightly with more levels of transform, beyond a certain level, you're not going to get that much more efficiency, because more and more details starts appearing in the high frequency components as well. And most the way that I'll come back to that later. And we use implement wavelet transform using the lifting techniques, which are simple and easy to implement. So on the left hand side is the lifting stage as applied in the encoder. On the right hand side, you have the reconstructing lifting stage. So the input is split into even and odd samples. That's the two subsample signals. And the P and U stand for the predict step and the update step, which are simple transfers over the FIR filters. And using these lifting techniques, the reconstruction stage can perfectly reconstruct the input. There's no quantization involved. The reconstruction stage can perfectly construct the input signal. So Dirac can be used where mathematically lossless coding is required. Example, for archival applications, Dirac can be used there as well without any quantization. Going to the next block in the diagram, we have motion compensation. Dirac uses overlap blocking mode motion compensation. It uses variable size blocks. And the block sizes are flexible in Dirac because they're not tied to any underlying block transform, because we use wavelet transform and not block transforms. And each block is grouped into 4x4 sets of super blocks. And we also found that overlapping of blocks mitigates the effects of it mitigates the effects of block edges, especially when you apply the wavelet transform to motion compensated residuals. The gob structure in Dirac is very flexible. Each picture can either be predicted, that's an interpicture, or it can be a non-predicted picture, that's an intra-picture. And for a predicted picture, each picture can either be used as a reference that other frames can predict from, or it can be used. It need not be used as a reference. And a frame can have a combination of these properties, that it can be an intra-predicted picture or an inter-non-predicted picture or the other, or non-reference as well. And each frame can reference to up to two pictures, which can either be future frames or previous frames. So Dirac can support conventional MPEG-2 style gob structures, that's the IBPP structure, or any other structure, as long as the decode, depending upon the decoder's buffering capabilities. We support a range of motion vector accuracies, right from pixel to an eighth of a pixel. And again, the decoder complexity will depend upon the motion vector accuracies. And there's also support for global motion estimates. Things such as camera pans and zooms can be encapsulated using qubits, thereby providing better frame compression, better compression performance. And also in Dirac, it's possible just to transmit the motion vector information alone without transforming any wavelet coefficients, because the picture can just be reconstructed based on the motion vectors alone. And this could be used in very low bitrate applications in which image quality is not that important. To further enhance performance, we have three different splitting modes. Like earlier I said, blocks are grouped into a set of 4x4 blocks. You can have just one motion vector for the entire super block, or just one motion vector for 16 blocks. Or you can have four motion vectors per super block, that is one for each set of 2x2 blocks, or 16 motion vector pairs for 16 motion vectors for the block. Depending upon the bit rate required, this particular feature can be exploited. And each prediction unit can either be an inter, completely predicted from within the picture, or it can be predicted from reference one, reference two, or both references. The next block is entropy coding, and quantization. Entropy coding is required so that for further reduction in the bit rate. So you want to exploit the fact because you want to use a variable bit size depending upon the value of the transform coefficients. With Weber transforms, you see that non-zero transform coefficients are within the same are in the same part in the higher subbands as at the high frequency subbands and the low frequency subbands. This is the statistical correlation between the different subbands. And arithmetic coding lets us exploit the statistical correlation. So Dirac builds up a statistical model based on different contexts, which are fed into the arithmetic coding module, and which improves the efficiency. And to further improve compression efficiency, we have that each subband after we apply the Weber transform is subdivided into blocks. And the number of blocks is completely flexible again. You can have variable number of blocks within each subband. And the encoders can choose either the same quantizer for each of these blocks within a subband, or choose multiple quantizers, maybe for region of interest coding. And the one good thing, the rationale behind this is that if you have smooth areas which have in which the transform coefficients are zero, they can be coded more efficiently because the entire block can be skipped. So that makes not only improve the compression efficiency, but also improves the decoder efficiency because blocks need not be decoded, they don't need to. We use the same arithmetic coding engine for motion data as well, which is coded losslessly. There's no quantization applied there. But all and to increase further the compression efficiency, all motion code metadata is all motion data is coded predictively from previously coded neighbors. There's various Dirac resources that are available. We have a Dirac specification that describes the Dirac byte stream as well as the decoder functionality. We've also, where necessary, we also include informative notes about motion compensation and arithmetic coding, etc., and grid, so that we get a better understanding of the algorithms used in Dirac. We have a reference implementation of Dirac that is developed at the BBC, which is available at the source code site that's on the slide. And this is a C++ implementation. We had a release recently that conforms with the Dirac specification. The Dirac specification stands at 2.0.0, and there's a rationale behind this, why there's no 1.0.0. I'm going to come to that as what 1.0.0 is all about. And we have a Schrodinger, we have an optimized implementation of Dirac as well called Schrodinger, and that's being developed by a partner of Fluendo. It's an ANSI C implementation, and it's free for commercial and non-commercial use. Everyone can download it and test it. And version 1.0 of Schrodinger will be released soon. That's going to be a full implementation of the Dirac specification 2.0.0. So recently we have been concentrating, we're also working on developing a high-end compression system for production and archiving applications with HDTV and digital cinema. There's lots of data needs to be moved around studios and between production facilities. And again, using proprietary, there are proprietary and codecs available in this particular end of the high end of the applications. But again, they have the licensing conditions can be proved to be quite onerous, and it induces a loss of complexity as well. So when BBC wanted to move towards at ZTV Production, we started researching a codec for this high-end side of the applications. But we'd already been developing Dirac, which was intended for low-bit rate distribution applications. So in 2006, a decision was taken to merge these two projects together so that we had one codec that covered the entire spectrum, right from streaming all the way up to digital cinema and HDTV production and post-production. And so this family of Dirac is called VC2 and Dirac. VC2 is also known as Dirac Pro. It started off as Dirac Pro, but since we started the standardization process in SMPTE, and there's already a codec, SMPTE is already in the process of standardizing, I think Microsoft Windows Media, a codec as VC1. So Dirac takes the next logic, so it's known as VC2. like Dirac, it is open technology. And the VC2 specification is Dirac 1.0.0, and that specification is available for download as well from the VC website. And it's been coded for simplicity and for efficiency and speed, what's required in high-end applications. And it's the high-end applications that VC2 is intended for only want modest compression. So we have VC2 is defined as a intra-frame only codec, and it codes either losslessly or visually lossless compression, so the compression factors range from 2 to 1 or 16 to 1, whereas with Dirac, low bit stream application can go all the way to 100 to 1. High-end applications need low latency, and with the VC2, it can go all the way up to 100 to 1. Just please let me know if I'm mumbling and you can't figure out what I'm saying. Sometimes I tend to do that. Okay. In the low latency mode, the latency is around about 6 HDTV lines from encode to decode or to a few milliseconds. And it's designed to be low complexity so that the hardware design can use low power and can be inexpensive to build, and we can have real-time encoding and decoding. And it uses the same compression technique, it uses the same stream syntax as well as the compression techniques that Dirac does. So like Weber transforms for still image compression, for image compression, for intra-picture compression. So essentially this is the same, it's a subset of Dirac. So Dirac is nothing but VC2 plus a motion compensation prediction codec as well. And at the moment, VC2 is in the process of being standardized at SMPTE, that's the Society for Motion Pictures. No, just video codec only. I'm not too sure, actually, about that. So these are different VC2 Dirac variants. You have the low latency syntax, where low compression factors but high quality. And you have the VC2 core syntax, which has a higher compression ratio, but higher latency than the low latency one as well, approximately a frame, because it's intra-frame only. And then you have Dirac, which has very good compression capabilities, and it is inter-frame, and high latency as well. These are the sample applications of production applications of VC2 and Dirac. For archiving and for transport of D-Cinema production, etc. I'll come to the storage and transport of D-Cinema production a bit later on, the applications that we have in that area. This is a VC2 video compression model. You see that it's quite similar to that of Dirac, except that we don't have motion compensation prediction in this particular in VC2. So the Weber transform is similar. You have, but the only most the differences mainly are in the coefficient, the ordering, coefficient ordering, and then arithmetic coding. So because at low latency, we can't use the existing Dirac for low latency because it doesn't support low latency. So that was one of the differences in VC2, which is later being put back into Dirac. And arithmetic coding is not used in entropy coding in low latency applications, in low latency VC2 syntax, because we found that at such high bit rates, it just adds complexity to the algorithm and does not give much to its compression efficiency. So we just use ex-Bloom coding. Pun? Yes, yeah. So just removing arithmetic, and that's what happens in Dirac as well. You have ex-Bloom coding followed by arithmetic coding for entropy, whereas here we just eliminate the arithmetic coding step altogether. So in the low latency syntax, once the Weber transform has been applied, we divide the transformed image into slices. So each slice, in each slice, you have one or two, a few coefficients from the lower subband, and all the additional, now the corresponding coefficients from the high frequency subbands. So this shows how the grouping is done. So in effect, what happens is that each slice represents a small region in the approximately represents a small region in the original picture. So this is one way that Dirac differs again from MPEG family of codecs, is that in that family the slices are, you slice the image before the transform is applied, whereas in Dirac the slices are created after the transform is applied, and that again removes the blockiness that's caused due to arbitrary transform boundaries. Log boundaries when it's done the other way around. Because each slice represents a small portion of the image, you can just, as soon as you get a slice, you can decode it, and one portion of the image is. So it's through that. Yeah. And then a different quantization factor is applied to each of these slices. In VC2, the length of the slice, the size of the slice determines the compression efficiency. So the larger and each slice has a fixed number of bytes to it. So the larger the length of the slice, the lower the compression efficiency is. And the way the quantization factor is chosen is that in the high frequency areas, the high frequency coefficients are almost losslessly coded, and most of the quantizations apply to the low frequency coefficients where, because you had large amount of content in that area, that sort of the quantization noise is masked quite well as well. And this shows how the slice is packed in VC2 slices, low syntax slice is packed. We have the quantization factor followed by the luminance coefficients and the multiplex chrominance coefficients. They're stored in the order from low frequency to high frequency. So it's almost similar to the zigzag scanning that you see in MPEG MPEG2 slices. Currently, there are two applications for VC2 syntax that we've been working on, our hardware implementations. One is called, the first one is the Dirac Pro 1.5. This is for easing the transition to 1080p production using the existing 1080i production facilities, like using the existing HDSDI 1.5 gigabits per second transmission links. It uses the VC2 low latency syntax, and the other technical details are there as well, two-level hard transform. And it's a very low latency. We have a six-line end-to-end delay through encoder and decoder. And the reference code for this is available on the source code site along with the Dirac code syntax as well. The second application is currently under development and likely to be finished soon, completed soon, is the Dirac code 270, is for transmission of HD data over standard definition SDI. So this allows people to reuse existing legacy software that they're using, legacy hardware they're using for standard definition software, standard definition production in HD as well, thereby reducing costs of transition to HD. And this offers a slightly higher compression ratio than derived for 1.5, which uses a three-level Legal transform, and it's about a higher latency as well, about 3 milliseconds end-to-end delay. And the reference code is going to be uploaded soon to the website. And Dirac is at the VC2 at the moment in being standardized by the SMTE. So the two projects there. The first one is a video compression, where we're trying to standardize the core VC2 VC2 compression algorithm, and developing recommended practice as well as to what coding parameters to use. The other project is standardizing the transport of Dirac over SDI interfaces. We've already, the first one is already in the pipeline, because I think it was in December last year that we submitted the video compression for SMTE standardization. The final document was submitted. And we hope to get this completed by March or April this year, VC2 standardization process. The SMTE VC2 specification that can be again downloaded from the Dirac website is version 1.0.0. And reference software can be downloaded, Pro 1.5 reference software can be downloaded from the website as well. And we have commercial hardware, and more details about that can be obtained from our commercial partner, newmediatechnology.com. So you can go to the website and see what hardware is available at the moment. Further developments is, like I said, mentioned, standardization of VC2 through SMTE, and we're going to, and completing the Dirac specification. Well, we've achieved that because we just released Dirac 2.0 specification. And we only hope that only things that are going to change in the specification will be any bugs that have been reported. And we want to standardize the entire Dirac specification, SMT as well, calling it VC version 2.2, version 2.0. And that will be sometime later this year. And we'll maybe submit Dirac to the ITU as well. And regarding software, we found that adoption of Dirac has been a bit slow because we didn't have usable software out there. The bitstream was changing constantly, and we didn't have fast enough software that could use encoding and decoding. And that's the reason why we spun off the Schrodinger project, and Schrodinger 1.0 based on Dirac implementing the entire 2.0.0 specification is going to be released soon, probably within the next couple of weeks or so. We wish to include Dirac in the FFmpeg libraries. Currently, there's work being done. I think it started off as a Google Summer of Code project where students were trying to implement Dirac within FFmpeg natively, but I think it's only the decoder and not much work is going to be done on the encoder side at the moment, at least. So we want to have Dirac support within FFmpeg as an external library so that it can, and since FFmpeg is used in quite a few other open source software, as well as non-open software. So it would be good to get Dirac there to increase the adoption. The current VC2 software is mainly for testing the, making sure that the implementation of the, it's not very efficient, the current VC2 software, reference software, because it's a reference implementation only. So we'll be soon developing open source software for example software that runs very efficiently for VC2 as well. And the further algorithm enhancements in the outline, we're not going to stop at Dirac 2.0.0. Probably we come up with further specifications that can have use more with algorithm enhancements. And we'll really, it's not the end of the line as far as Dirac is concerned. We're going to try to develop more algorithms to make it suitable for more applications. And we have the necessary evil of a direct show filter for Dirac, because mainly for our Windows users, so that you can play that Dirac using the Windows Media Player. So that's in the pipeline as well. So that's about it. So any questions?
I actually do have a question. Believe it or not, one that I forgot to ask you at FOMS.
Okay.
It's pretty clear from the presentation that the intended application of Dirac is very high quality, very high bit rate.
Only the VC2 side of things, not...
Well, the VC2 side of things is ultra high quality, ultra high bit rate. Dirac inherits that to some extent. What do you see Dirac eventually scaling down to? Because part of what we need to decide is Theora a bridge to Dirac, or is Theora a complement to Dirac at ultra-low bit rates that no self-respecting broadcast quality codec would want to touch?
No, we intend Dirac to be used across everywhere. So yes, we do want Dirac to be used at very low bit rates as well. So yes, Theora could, I guess, be used as a bridge to Dirac, but it's always nice to have a choice of codecs. So it doesn't mean the use of uptake of Dirac for low bit stream applications doesn't mean Theora needs to be.
Oh, sure. The reason I'm asking is because if at some point it's clear that Dirac is obviously superior to Theora by every metric at, you know, at 96 or 112 kilobits, you know, postage stamp, well, a little bigger than postage stamp, but basically talking head style video from a quick cam on MySpace.
So which what level resolution, what's the image resolution?
When I'm talking about low resolution, low bit rate stuff, I'm talking, you know, typically 320 by 240 or smaller. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so we do, we have been using the rack on set size, so that's 352 by 288, and we did get good quality.
Not just in terms of course, a good codec is going to scale down that far, but also in terms of when you're looking at video that is that poor quality, you're generally also talking about code complexity constraints, CPU load, and so on. No way to tell now?
I can't answer at the moment, but maybe Schrodinger will handle it. I'm not too sure about it.
Right,
so that's something that can always be considered, actually, because we do intend it for if such a requirement comes up, we'll definitely be working towards it.
Righto?
Yeah.
You obviously the intent is to releasing open source software. I'm just wondering the other around patents. Have you had to step around various software patents to design Dirac just wondering the impact of patents.
Yes, I think especially arithmetic coding is what the minefield, I think, there. But we've made sure that the implementation techniques used in Dirac don't, as far as we know, don't infringe any patents, because we have done quite a bit of patent searching and made sure that, as far as it's possible, that it's not used infringing any patents.
They pay the patent
Hi, yeah, I just wanted to cover off two areas. Around the subject of VC2,
mm-hmm.
Is the core focus of that around production of video rather than broadcast? And is it actually primarily targeted at lossless transmission of video within a production environment?
Not just lossless, but also it's intended for them, because the current applications are just for transport links and things like that. But we intend it to be used in the entire production line. So it can be used as a contribution link, it can be used as on the playout servers, it can be used for anything other than distribution applications, essentially, that within the production environment, yes.
Okay. And at the moment, a lot of the focus in terms of the next generation of digital TV broadcast, in at least in the high-def space, is focused on H.264. Is there a chance at some point we could see Dirac in that space?
We sure hope so, yeah.
And is one of the aims of this to basically be able to put out 1080p equivalent bit rates that we're seeing, say 720p or 1080i at the moment?
We did do some experiments at IBC last year. We did demonstrate Dirac for 1080p around 12 megabits per second. It was good broadcast quality at 12 megabits per second, so there shouldn't be anything that stops its uptake. as such. It's just, it needs to be done.
Yeah, it's just in some of the other markets, I'm seeing HD trying to be squeezed in between 6 and 8 megabits.
We're still trying to improve the algorithms in Dirac, so hopefully, yes. That's what I can say at the moment. There's lots of work, because we're trying to actually, at the moment, work is being done on NHK formats of 8K by 4K or something, also insanely huge pictures. And so we're going to start investing in algorithms to improve the efficiency further. So hopefully that will help and across it. Because the same thing, we're using the same technology, we're using the same compression technology throughout the application, so hopefully that will help at other levels as well.
Yes, my question is, obviously you have tested this in an archiving situation, and how is this file size compared to like normal MPEG-2, MPEG-4?
For archiving, I think we compared with the JPEG 2000, actually, because we did it in lossless mode, so we compared it to JPEG 2000, and it does, the compression ratios are as good as or slightly better than JPEG 2000 when we tested.
And you said in the future will be the file size or file structure compared to OMF files?
Pardon?
Compatibility with OMF engine, OMF structure, file structure.
I'm not so sure about okay.
Or HD production on MX.
I was just wondering, is there any production use of Dirac at the moment, or which places? Like, does the BBC use it in production at the moment?
At the moment, no. It's still, because it's just something that's been standardized just recently, but we hope for it to be used. There are in the pipeline talks for internal applications of Dirac and VC2, but nothing concrete aside.
And so, just follow up, is the Schrodinger library the ones that is recommended for
yes.
use in applications?
Yes, it is, yes.
You don't happen to have any sample bit streams?
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get in touch with my manager over the past few days because things have been busy there, and I need to get things approved before I can show any pictures because of. So, if there are any, if I can get any, if I can get permission, I'll just upload them to the website. You can download them and check them out.
So, I have a question about encapsulation formats. What encapsulation formats have you put Dirac into yet? So I'm vaguely aware that there was a definition of Dirac into OGG.
Yes, that, yeah.
OGG. Is Dirac also, does it stand by itself?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it can just stand alone as well. Yes, it can. As an like an MPEG-2 elementary stream, it can, yes.
Yeah. So when Simtu uses it and uses it with PCM audio, is that going to be encapsulated together in some form? Is there a plan, or is MXF used for that? Or?
So for transmission links, the SDI transport will encapsulate the audio and the video bitstream. When it's treated as a file, there are a number of alternatives, but one we're looking at is MXF wrapping in editing systems. And we've already done some work. We've already got what's called a node in the SIMPTE registry. And we just have to finish the development of the mapping mechanic soon. And it'll be finished soon. So it's under development.